Perfect.
Coming to you live.
We're live.
From the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live.
Live.
And now.
Broadcasting live.
We will broadcast
live
on the Fight Mixer Show.
What's going on, everybody? Are we live? We're live? Mic check, check, check.
We are live.
What's going on, everybody? Oh, fuck yeah. How you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Awesome. Awesome. And we're here with Christian. Christian, fresh off his win.
Hey.
First round guillotine, first round triangle choke. Christian, how you feeling?
Yeah. Feeling great, you know, super happy. I was able to get a quick W about a week and a half ago, you know, and I'm just excited to get back in there again and, you know, keep the momentum going.
Congratulations, man. Awesome. Huge win. So my biggest concern too, you train out of American Top Team, and of course we have UFC coming up, and we heard the unfortunate news about Mike Brown getting sick, which he interviewed one of your teammates, and unfortunate, like one of the best coaches in the world getting sick. And you know, my prayers to Mike Brown and his family, and of course the entire American Top Team family. How's everybody doing? How's the team? How's Mike doing? Like, how's everybody hanging in there?
As far as I know, Mike Brown, he's been asymptomatic, so you know, thank God for that. You know, he hasn't he hasn't had a cough, hasn't had anything. He's probably one of the coaches that I work with there the most, but now I think taking a little more his role has been Steve Mako, and I think I've been getting great work in with him too. And then I work at American Top Team Miramar and American Top Team Sunrise, so I'm still getting my work in. You know, Dan Lambert's also doing a good job getting all of us tested constantly. So I think that's something really important too, to like keep us on the loop and make sure that we're staying healthy through, you know, these crazy times.
Yeah. And with everything going on.
I heard that.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say that Parampia, the head jiu-jitsu coach, is also tested positive.
Yeah.
Is that a concern for the whole team that multiple coaches, head coaches are getting COVID? I'd be concerned about that.
I mean, right now, Dan Lambert's testing all of us. It's just a thing, I guess. We'll see who has it and who doesn't have it type of thing. But everyone's taking every type of precaution possible. Right now, the only people allowed in the gym are people that have fights coming up and things like that. Like, even before, when I didn't have a fight coming up, I wasn't allowed to be at American Top Team Coconut Creek. I have another fight coming up now, so that's the only reason that I'm really allowed to be in the gym. Like, so I think they're doing a good job at separating us and just making sure that we have, like, designated partners and things like that. They have, like, the disinfection stations and all that stuff. And then we're constantly being tested. I'm getting tested again next week just to keep making sure that I'm healthy. And, yeah, pretty much they're doing just a good job with that.
Awesome. And you guys put on – ATT put on a fucking clinic at Titan. Like, one of your teammates, we had him on last week. One first round, you won in the first round. Like, can you just – take me through this training camp, because obviously there's a lot of shit going on. I mean, both of you guys have winning records. You have a lot on the line, especially because there's so much momentum on your side. Like, during preparations and training camp, did this ever play in your head, like, and moving forward as you train for your next fight, is this something in the back of your head, like, oh shit, like, you know, at any moment I can be asymptomatic or I can catch something? Like how did you stay focused, and how are you continuously staying focused moving forward and keeping that win streak alive?
I think for me, the main thing is I focus on what I can control. You know, like, I can't control if I do get the virus or if I don't get the, I mean, I can control it, of course, you know, as long as I stay safe. And I'm taking every precaution possible. You know, I'm always washing my hands. I'm always trying to make sure that I'm training with the same training partners over and over again. I'm not trying to train with a bunch of different people. As far as the last training camp, it was probably a really stressful one. I think my fight got postponed like 2 or 3 times. I was supposed to fight... I was supposed to fight March 17th at the Hard Rock. And then the week of the fight, the whole thing with COVID started. And then it got postponed to April 24th. From April 24th, it got postponed to May 29th. And then May 29th, it got postponed to June 26th when I actually did get to compete. But just during that whole time, I just really used that time to keep getting better. I worked a lot with just the same people. I feel like it was a lot of, like, quality over quantity. And I felt like I was able to improve a lot because a lot of the sessions were more directed towards me as far as what I needed to improve as a mixed martial artist and kind of take my game to the next level. So I think that was something that was very beneficial during this time.
Got it. And your jiu-jitsu was superb, by the way. Like, most of your wins come from submission. And you love that fucking triangle choke, my friend. Like, every time I see you in a fight, you're nailing it. Like, and you hit it every single time. And your setups are so smooth going into it. And you're so comfortable, like, in any position. Like, do you say that now you're going to try to, like, branch out and, you know, you're, obviously your jiu-jitsu is on point, but if you can criticize yourself, like, is there anything else that you feel as a professional that you need to work on to get to the next level?
I feel like I'm very well-rounded. I feel like I was a little disappointed in the last fight. I feel like I can show a lot more. I mean, the fight ended in 2 minutes, so, you know.
2 minutes.
So, like, at that point, it was a little frustrating in that, at that extent. I feel like I have all the tools. I feel like I can wrestle. I can strike. I can. I mean, I've showed the grappling over and over again. But I feel like people are going to be surprised. If a lot of people think that I'm just the grappler, that I'm just this, like, jiu-jitsu ace or something like that, I think I'm not. I'm nothing like that. I can strike very well. I can wrestle very well. I can push a very hard pace, whether it be on the feet or whether it be on the ground. And I feel like I have a fight coming up now. I'm not. I can't really announce it officially yet. But I feel like with this opponent, I'm really going to be able to show everything on my game. I really feel like I'm well-rounded. That's something I pride myself on. I've never believed that in mixed martial arts, especially the day of mixed martial arts that we're in now, you can get away with being a one-trick pony, and that's something that I'll never be. If the submissions keep presenting themselves, as far as in the fights, if I see them, I'm going to take them. But I really do feel like I'm a well-rounded mixed martial artist. I know in this game, you can't just be a one-trick pony. And I'm always trying to sharpen up, whether it be my striking, my wrestling, my grappling, my clinch game, everything.
Right. And you keep smoking people right out of the gate. So, like, obviously, you haven't showed all your tools because you kill them, like, within the first round. Like, your style is very overwhelming. And it's also, you know, it's like when I watch your fights, you know, every opportunity presents itself and you know how to, like, capitalize on it right away. Like, you don't waste time. You don't bullshit around. If you want to get them out of there, you're going to get them out of there. So heading into the next fight, obviously, you know your opponent. We don't. Like, what's going to be the strategy? You want to keep it standing? You want to go on the ground? Or do you want to, like, get maybe some more minutes in just so you can get some more work in, show more of your tools? Or do you want to continue, like, continuously? Like, let's end it in the first round. Let's get this over with. An opportunity goes for itself. I'm going for the kill. Like, what's your game plan?
As far as the quicker I can get somebody out of there, the better. You know, if I can get somebody out of there the first round every time, I'm going to take it. But, I do think in this fight, I do feel like the guy that I'm facing, I mean, I feel like every fight in my head is going to be a 15 or a 20 or a 25 minute war. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't turn out to be that way, which I'm grateful for. You know, I feel like I put in a lot of hard work to separate myself from the competition that I'm facing. And I feel like in this fight, my game plan is to really go in there and put on a mixed martial arts performance. I really want to, like, show this guy about my striking. I want to use my wrestling, use my jiu-jitsu. I want to use everything. Because I feel like this guy, he's going to be thinking a lot of the things and look at my record, and he's going to say most of my wins are by submission. And I'm pretty sure he's going to go in there and think that I'm just going to go in there and try to grapple. And I think I'm going to have a lot of surprises for him. And I think that's something that I give people a lot of problems with. Because a lot of times when the fights start, I start putting it on you on the feet. And then you try to find a different avenue, and then you'll maybe try to take me down, and then you're going into my world. So at the end of the day, I feel comfortable everywhere, and I think that's a problem with a lot of these guys, that I'm just comfortable everywhere, and I think that's going to be a problem for every flyweight that I face.
Well, naturally so. I mean, you started your career in 2012. I mean, you're a veteran. Like, you know, you've been in the sport for 8 years. You know, whatever fight, this ain't your first rodeo. Like, standing on the ground, you're comfortable everywhere. How did you get started in mixed martial arts? How did you get involved with it? How did you get your first fight? Like, how did you fall into this sport?
I first started with Taekwondo. That was the first thing that I ever started with. I actually have a black belt in Taekwondo. That was the first thing I ever started with. I believe I was like 12 or 13. It was a friend of mine that he was doing Taekwondo, and he told me if I wanted to do it with him, so he could kind of have like a friend to do it with. And then I joined, And funny enough, he quit like a year later, and I was the one that became obsessed with it. And I just started doing Taekwondo. And in the beginning, I just had dreams of being like a boxer, a kickboxer. And then I had no idea what jiu-jitsu was. I had no idea what wrestling was. And then I remember, I think it was UFC 94, I saw George St. Pierre. And that was when I really started getting like a passion for mixed martial arts. And then I started training, and like I just started practicing jiu-jitsu with a friend of mine that was a purple belt at the time. It was nothing serious. I was doing maybe jiu-jitsu like 2 or 3 times a week. And I was training at a boxing gym. And then I took my first amateur fight. I think it was in 2014. And that one went horrible. Absolutely fucking horrible. I got beat up bad. I just wasn't prepared for that fight. And then after, I told myself I needed to, like, really, if I wanted to do this, I needed to take this serious. And I joined the American Top Team Miramar. And from then, everything is history. I think I started fighting consistently in 2015. That's when I built up my amateur record of 5-2. I won the amateur titles. And then in 2017, I went pro. And then that's when I started going to American Top Team in Coconut Creek. And I started training with guys like Juan Puerta, who was the Tennessee Flyweight Champion, who's with Combate now. Training with guys like Juicy Air Formiga, Kyoji Horiguchi. And I think that's really elevated my game these past like 2.5 years. And then here we are 2.5 years later. I'm 7 pro fights into my career. So that's pretty much how everything's been going.
Awesome. And who has been most helpful around the gym? Especially you have a plethora of teammates at your disposal, and obviously you have coaches like we talked about, Mike Brown, one of the best coaches in the game. Like, what teammates would you say are the most helpful? What, you know, who's really reached out and said, hey, you know, like even on the amateur level, when you first started with ATT, who was the one guy that really reached out and helped you out throughout your career, all the way from amateurs all the way to professional?
Oh yeah, definitely from amateur all the way to pro. That they're still with me to this day from my second amateur fight when I joined the American Top Team, that I always need to give thank you to them. It's a few people. One of my main training partners, his name is Richard Jansen. He's still an amateur fighter right now. He's probably going to be going pro by the end of the year. He's 4-2 right now. He fights at 135 pounds. He's a very talented fighter, and he's helped me from the beginning. He's cornered me in all my fights, and he's always had my back for everything. He's someone I consider like a brother. Also, another training partner of mine, his name is Justin Corrette. He's a 125 as well. He has a boxing background. He's helped me for a very long time. And the main coaches that I've had also has been Carl Darbouz. He's my striking coach. He's been there for me since the beginning. And also two of my wrestling and just MMA coaches in general, Chris Navarro and Wilson Gouveia. Those have been the main people that have been with me from the start all the way up to now.
Awesome. And talking about talent, like, you know, you see a rap. Do you ever see like Joanna and ask her advice, or like pick her brain, or Jorge, or do you see any of these guys and actually like pick their brain and say, hey, you know, now you're at the top of your game. Like, what do I have to do to get to your spot? Like, do you ever talk to these guys?
Oh, Joanna's someone I consider like a personal friend. I think I've helped her in like 3 or 4 training camps. Me and I've been like one of her main sparring partners. And I think to go with someone like her and like spar with her like 5 rounds like 2-3 times a week, like me and her, like we've had wars in the gym, me and her. And I think picking her brain and talking with someone like her, because she's been in some dog fights, like those Claudia Gadelha fights or like 2 crazy fights, like just talking with her. Yeah, talking with her. And then Dustin Poirier, he's taught class a couple times, and he's like shown techniques, and just like watching those guys and kind of picking their brains, it's something that always motivates and inspires me to be surrounded by champions every day. And I think just one of the best things that I have at Coconut Creek is like every single day I'm training with different high level guys. Like I'm never just training with the same people. And I really think that that's something that's molded my game, is just constantly every day I got to bring my A game. If not, it's going to be a rough day in the gym.
Now I'm Polish, so I look up to Joanna. You know, she's awesome. You know, I watch like her stare downs, and I watch like her mystique, and I watch her fights, and I get Vietnam flashbacks. Like, she's just a scary lady. So like, very intimidating lady. Like, when you first got to ATT, was it kind of like, oh shit, you know, this is not where I park my car? Like, well, was it like you had a build up to that confidence that you have right now? Or like, do you already have it that this is what I want to do? This is my career path. This is the projection that I'm going. Like, what was it like when you first stepped in the sport or stepped into ATT? Overwhelming, scary? Like, what was it like?
Well, I was a part of American Top Team Miramar and American Top Team Sunrise. I wasn't training at American Top Team Coconut Creek until I became a professional. When I first Yeah, when I first went to American Top Team, the main academy, when I became a professional, I think the first week was very overwhelming for me. I was, like, getting beat up left and right, and I was like, I don't know if, like, I'm at that level. And then I kind of just told myself, you know, like, I'm going to find a way, and I'm going to keep grinding. I'm going to keep grinding and grinding. And it took me a while, definitely, to feel how I feel now. I feel like every day I go there, and I feel like now it's – I've improved so much, and I think it's just been – from those guys putting me in bad spots and having to figure out ways to get out of it, and then getting tips from people like Joanna Jędrzejczyk and people like that telling me, like, hey, maybe do this, hey, maybe do that. And I think that's helped me a lot.
Cool. And this is something you want to pursue for the rest of your life, right? Like, you want to do the UFC, you want to do, you know, Ryzen or One. Like, where exactly do you see your career heading?
Oh, yeah, I definitely want to fight, you know, like, as old as I possibly can be. If I could be like 40, 45, or I don't know. Well, whatever age until, you know, my body allows me to, I definitely want to fight. It's something that I love with all my heart. And I think I give, like, my whole life to this sport. Like, every single day I'm doing something that has to do with this sport. If it's not something that has to do with this sport, I'm not interested in it. Like, I'm not interested in partying and drinking and stuff like that. Really, all I care about is this. This is something that I put all my time into. And sorry, what was the second part of that question? I kind of got lost in it. Sorry about that.
No, your projection, like, where do you see yourself? And the reason why I'm asking this, and to be perfectly frank with you and be transparent, is because, like, you and I are both little guys, and you know, so from the jump, you're told, well, little guy, this is not a little guy's sport. Like, and you see in the UFC, like, nobody's making money at 125, 135, and it's hammering your head that no one's going to buy the pay-per-view. Like, so with that in mind, like, what do you think, you know, are you going to be the guy to, like, go to the UFC, bring up that weight class to a higher level? Like, is it nerve-wracking to know that, you know, in the UFC, you know, they're not promoting the little guys like they should. They're not promoting the lighter weight classes. Maybe I have to go to One. Maybe I have to go to Ryzen. Maybe I have to go to another promotion where they actually appreciate and enjoy the lighter weight classes. So that's the reason why I was asking. It was like a twofold question, but I was like trying to lead you into it. But, like, is that what you say is a challenge to you, or something that you think about mentally, that, you know, if I want to pursue this as a passion or, like, as a career, that, you know, there might not be money where I want to go, which is obviously the UFC. Maybe I should go somewhere else, or, like, what's your game plan?
My game plan is definitely to work my way either to the UFC or ONE FC. I think those are the two spots right now for flyweights in general that are probably, like, the best. If I want to make this my career and make the kind of money that I need to make, I believe in the UFC. They're starting to sign a lot more flyweights. I think once this whole Benavidez Figueiredo thing gets figured out, which I think it's next month, I believe there's going to be a lot more clarity in the flyweight division. I think there's a lot of exciting guys coming up in flyweight. I think you got a guy like Alex Perez, who's putting guys away left and right. And I think there's other flyweights coming up. I think they just signed this guy, Brandon Royale, I believe his name is. He just beat Tim Elliott on short notice. I think there's a lot of also Stylebender's teammate, Kaikara France, who's constantly putting guys away, Brandon Moreno. I think there's a next wave of flyweights that are coming that are really going to generate some buzz in the UFC. I think it's going to take maybe a year or two to see some more, because I think now the bantamweight division is probably the most exciting that it's ever been, and guys are getting a lot of push there. I think the flyweights will soon follow after. But as far as, I think the UFC or ONE FC are definitely my two preferred destinations as far as the flyweight division, because I see myself being a flyweight for the duration of my entire career.
And do you think with the UFC, and, like, because I'm back and forth on it. Do you think that the machine needs to get behind the flyweight division, bantamweight division, invest more money into it, just like how they promote a McGregor or promote other weight classes? Do you think the machine needs to get behind it, or do you think they need to hire more flyweights and bantamweights, more star power that will relate to a crowd and bring them in? Like, what do you think can solve this little issue of, you know, the crowds not being there, or the audience is not being there for our weight class?
Yeah, I believe the bantamweight division now is stacked. I think right now, like, everybody talking about the bantamweight division. They're talking about Sean O'Malley. They're talking about guys like Aljamain Sterling, the Peter Yan, Aldo fight. A lot of people are talking about that. I think for the flyweight division, the biggest problem is I don't think there's enough guys right now. And I think there's a lot of exciting flyweights. I think that's just the problem with the MMA community. They haven't really been exposed to the flyweight division so much. I think we had a very dominant champion in Mighty Mouse, and he kind of went out there and he made it look easy a lot of the times, and just made it look like there wasn't any competition. I do believe there's a lot of flyweights out there. I feel like myself, I feel like there's a lot of other flyweights coming up. Like, there's guys like Jamie Alvarez that I train with, guys like Juan Puerto that are super exciting guys. And I think if they get the opportunity to show it, I think the flyweight division is more exciting than any division out there, to be honest. You know, like, guys like us, we don't get tired. We can do everything that the bantamweights can do. We can strike. We can grapple at a very high level. High level scrambles. High level wrestling. High level striking. We're gonna be throwing flying shit, spinning shit, whatever. we're not gonna get fucking, you know, tired doing it. You know, like, might be up 15 or 25 minutes. So I think it's just signing more guys, which I think they're starting to do that now. I think with the coronavirus, it's a little challenging now. Probably like signing some guys. I do see a lot more guys getting that short notice call. So I think it's just a matter of time before the flyweights start getting their spotlight, because I think a couple of the last few cards that the flyweights were on, they actually won fight of the night. I think Pantoja and Figueiredo, when they fought, they won fight of the night. When Pantoja fought it was Alex Perez and Formiga, they won like another exciting fight, and he got like a finish of the night bonus. So I think little by little it's going to start picking up.
Cool. So do you want to take a couple more fights in Titan, and then you're ready to, you know, give the green light and say, hey, I'm ready for the UFC and other promotions? Like, well, so how many fights do you want to take for Titan, or as many fights as possible to get your golden ticket pulled?
To be honest, you know, I take all these opportunities as they come. You know, I think everything's been like happening very fast in my career. Like, my first pro fight was for Bellator. I remember after that, it's just been like these Titan fights have been really crazy, and I really love Titan. One of the main goals that I have for myself is to win the Titan FC flyweight title. That's something I would like to do first before I go to the UFC or 1FC or anything like that. But if I were to get the short notice call right now, because I know my manager, that was something he's been telling me a lot, that a lot of, they're calling a lot for short notice fights. That's something I'll take. I feel like I'm ready 365 days a year. So if the UFC called me right now, I would take that opportunity in a heartbeat. Because I think in life, you know, we don't get opportunities, especially in this sport. We don't get many opportunities, and I think I would jump on it. But if it was my ideal scenario, I would like to win the Titan FC flyweight title and then go to the UFC or 1FC. That'd be my ideal, like, perfect world scenario.
Gabe, from somebody that, you know, you've been through the entire process and the system, would you say short notice fights are the fights to take, especially if you want to get there in the quickest amount of time possible, like get instant gratification? Someone calls you, say, hey, someone dropped out. Do you want to step in this fight? Or, like, would you wait it out, win a title, and just wait for them to notice you? Like, what do you think, Gabe?
Go ahead. Get back to it. I'll sit back here. You're talking to me.
As far as what I prefer, I mean, I would like, it depends. Because, you know, like, I could give an example, kind of like that, the guy, Brandon Royale. He took a short notice opportunity and he beat the number 12 guy, Tim Elliott. And his life kind of changed overnight, you know. He was talking about how he was like working, I think it was at Starbucks or something like that. And he went and he ended up making like around 50-60K. And, you know, that's like some life changing money, you know, especially starting off. Yeah. Right? So, like, I don't know. I think I'm open for all of it. I would definitely love a short notice fight, because I feel I'm not one of those guys that I'm only training when there's a training camp. So I feel like if they call me right now, right before this interview, I was going on a 45-50 minute run. So I feel like I'm always trying to stay in shape and I'm always trying to get better. So I would prefer any of it. But like I said, an ideal scenario, I would like to win the Titan FC flyweight title first. And after that, if they could call me the week after and tell me to fight next weekend, I'll be down for that. So I'm ready to fight whenever.
Because you ATD guys are fucking animals. You guys are like cut from like a different cloth. And I'll tell you one guy, fucking Jorge, who took a fight, Street Jesus, tested positive for being the baddest motherfucker on planet Earth. Taking a fight against a champion within 7 days' notice. You're like, you got to be shitting me. Like, going into the next UFC card, and obviously I want to pick your brain, and also you too, Gabe, but like, main event, Kamaru Usman versus Street Jesus, the man himself. Why me? Holy crap. Like, what do you think about this fight coming up, both of you guys?
As far as myself, I think in this main event, I think a big, big thing is going to be how well-rounded Masvidal is. I think the only X factor is going to be his cardio, I think. But from what I've seen, at least every day that I've been going to the gym, he's there. So I do feel like he's in shape and he's been training really hard. And I think a lot of people are going to be surprised on how well-rounded Masvidal is. I mean, I think everyone that's a hardcore fan knows how good Masvidal is. But I think a lot of the new people, they start saying, can Masvidal wrestle? Can Masvidal grapple? And I think a lot of those questions are going to be answered on Saturday night. I think Masvidal is probably going to go in there and take him out in the second or third round. That's my official prediction. I think he'll take him out in the second or third round.
Gabe, what do you think?
No.
Come on, Gabe.
Masvidal is one of those guys that, I mean, he's been around for as long as I've been fighting. And, I mean, he's as gangster as they come. All I have to say is when Masvidal fought Paul Daly, Paul Daly took him down and beat him by – beat him by decision. And it was just the wrestling that was the deciding factor. I think Masvidal is a gangster, and if you trade with him, unless you're a step above, like a Wonderboy Thompson, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And Masvidal is as well-run as they get, and he's as much of a fighter as you're going to find. But I think Usman's wrestling, unfortunately, is going to be the deciding factor. And he's going to use it.
Do you think when he loses, do you guys think when he loses they're going to ask for another match because of an excuse?
I think it's going to depend how competitive the fight is. If it's like a five-round decision where he gets taken down every single round, they're not going to do an immediate rematch. If it's one of those fights where, let's say, Masvidal wins two rounds and it's 2-2 going into the fifth, and maybe Usman squeaks out like a split decision or something like that, they're definitely going to run it back, especially it being on 6 days' notice. I think the deciding factor is going to be how competitive the fight itself is.
Yeah, but also he fought. Okay.
I need to. I hope Masvidal wins. Like as far as for a guy who's been grinding and been in it, like, you know, the guy's been in it forever, really, genuinely. Like, he's one of those guys that you want to have success. And the fact that he stood his ground when it came to money, that's — we need more guys that are like, look, I'm not gonna fight for pennies. I need to get money. That way the whole sport grows. But if we're going skill set to skill set, I have to think it's gonna be Usman.
Yeah, but I think Kamaru Usman is going to try a setup for takedown. And Jorge's stand-up is superb. Like, that guy can stand in the shit and fight in the shit for as long as possible. Like, Nate Diaz, he fought him like a gangster. And Jorge wasn't backing up. He wasn't slowing down. He was consistent, kept the same pace, cut the same pace the entire fight. Ben Askren tried shooting for a takedown, and guess what happened to Ben Askren? Like, and Ben Askren's an Olympian and also an NCAA champion, you know, and better than most wrestlers Jorge will ever fight in his life. I mean, Jorge is an animal, and he's unpredictable, and he's, you know, he's as tough as they come, you know. And I, you know, I'm in between. Like, I love Jorge to pull it off, but also 6 days' notice, and that's why I want to kind of like pick your brain, Christian. Like, was he always in training camp? And, like, finally he got the call and said, fuck it. Like, short-term fight, just like you were talking about. Like, short-term opportunity. You're going to pay me that cash and give me that cheddar cheese? Fuck it. I'm going to fight Usman. Like, was he always in training camp and getting ready for the small case that he might have to step up? Or what's been going on with him?
Yeah, but don't you think that Jorge has been probably training for Usman the whole time? Like,
you think so?
I would think so.
Well, at least from what I've seen, they brought in a lot of high-level wrestlers to the camp, and Masvidal was working with all those guys. And another thing that to take into consideration, Masvidal was helping Dustin Poirier a lot for the Dan Hooker fight, and that was a five-round title fight. I know Masvidal was one of his main sparring partners, and I think one of the things that I have seen him every day working and grinding, he's been sharpening up his skills. They had like a 4 or 5-time kickboxing world champion at the gym, and Masvidal was working with him. There's pictures on it on the American Top Team Instagram of him working with him, and he's been working a lot. I think another deciding factor in the Kamaru Usman fight, I think it's how uncomfortable Kamaru Usman's going to be in the striking against Masvidal. I do think Masvidal is a lot of steps above Kamaru Usman, and I think that could be something that could give Kamaru Usman problems as far as using the wrestling. If Masvidal can start stuffing a takedown or two and he's working the body and hitting him to the chin. Because I believe when Kamaru Usman was fighting Colby was outstriking him. And I think if you're having problems with that, and I mean, you could even look at the Emil Mech fight when he fought Emil Mech. He was looking very uncomfortable on the feet. What was saving him was the takedowns. And I think with a guy like Masvidal, he's going to be gritty and he's going to be getting back up. And I think it's going to be a good fight. And I think with the striking, I think it's going to be a difference for Masvidal. But I'm excited to see it. I do think he's been, or not even think, I've been watching him. He's been training the entire time. And I don't think, as far as him being in shape, I think that's going to be too much of a factor.
Jorge is definitely a better striker than Kobe Covington, like without question. And Kobe Covington was landing quite a few shots. I mean, he was toe to toe with Kamaru Usman and laying some leather. You know, like I think Jorge brings a lot more of an arsenal on the feet than Kobe Covington will. So I think Jorge is going to put him in some prom spots. But you know, it's so hard to predict. You know, it's such a fight where there's so many variables because they're so, both of them are so fucking talented. Like, this is what you expect from a title fight. Like, two elite athletes with so many tools in the tool shed, and like how it plays out, you know, I have no idea. I'm pulling for Jorge because I'm a fan of fighters making money, and I'm a fan of superstars being made, and I want more superstars to be brought into the sport and be made where, like, you know, we get more of the outside, like, kind of like onlookers that never watch UFC or get, like, watch MMA besides, like, when a Conor McGregor fight plays or something like that. I would love another superstar to be made and Jorge to win this belt because he's so marketable. Like, he's just a marketable guy. And that goes to my next question. With ATT, do they like run through a course where saying, well, it's not just about fighting, it's also about marketing, it's about marketing yourself and, you know, making that money? Or like, well, like, what's the system like at ATT? Is it just, you know, sharpen your tools and like what you like jiu-jitsu and multiple styles? Or are you getting like different perspectives where you're saying, well, you also have to work on a character and you have to, you know, sell tickets? And like, is it like an entire spectrum of the MMA education?
No, not really. To be honest, like over there, well, at American Top Team, it's obviously, I think it's the best gym in the world. Just, you know, I'm probably a little biased when I say that, but I do think over there, you know, we sharpen our skills and things like that. But as far as how we promote ourselves and how we market ourselves, I think that's pretty much up to ourselves. There's no one over there really saying to push a certain character or anything like that. I think all of us really just have our own personality and we kind of just let it shine. And some stick better than others. But yeah, no, I don't, there's no over there, no one really saying that, oh, you should maybe do this or do that. I think everyone kind of just does their own thing as far as that.
So Kobe Covington was naturally, he just came up with this guy like, hey, I'm going to be this guy and just, he's right now out of ATT, and like, you know, was that like a big drama or like it was just like, hey, you can't train here anymore or anything like that? Because that's what people like that controversial character and everything, you know. Was he like just removed from the gym? Was he told to go? Like, what was that drama that was going down? I know a lot of people were asking me about that.
As far as in the gym, it wasn't really too much drama. I mean, the gym's so big. And a lot of the times they would separate Masvidal and Kobe. They would have them come at different times and stuff like that. The only thing about Kobe, I mean, I think everybody knows it was like a whole character thing. I think for me, I remember seeing him and like just how nice he was. It kind of like blew my mind a little bit. But I know he started doing that character because after the Maya fight, they were saying, regardless, win or lose, we're going to cut you because we don't feel like you're exciting. So he kind of just completely 360'd it and turned into like the heel. I think he started taking it a little bit too far when he started just going after teammates and things like that. I don't think there's a need for that. I think if you want to talk about everybody else and make it ATT versus the world, all right, yeah, sure, do your own thing. But I think once you start kind of talking about your own teammates and things like that, I think that's just where you're going a little too far, in my opinion. But as far as him leaving, I don't really know how he left or what. I found out just from looking at MMA Junkie and seeing that he left, I really didn't know that he left. Towards the end, he really was doing his own thing. Like, you'd kind of just see him like in the corner working with one or two guys. He wasn't really working with the coaches or anything like that. He was kind of just doing his own thing. I think he really just started isolating himself towards the end, and I don't know what really happened towards the end of him leaving.
Got it. And we're heading towards the 30-minute mark, and I love talking to you, Christian. Like, you're the man in my book, and especially, you know, I wish you the best of luck in all your career endeavors and all your fights, and obviously I'm a big fan of American Top Team and all your talent that's there. So if two more questions. You have a dream opponent or somebody you want to fight. Who is the person? Like, what, like, it could be in UFC, 1FC, any FC. Like, who is the guy that you would want to fight?
Ooh. Okay, I mean, these are two fights that I've always talked about, like, friends, that I would just say, I think, like, as far as myself, like, when I look at my style, and I say, like, that, like, if you put me against this guy, I think it'd be fireworks, and I think it'd be something that would push the flyweight division, because I think it'd just be fireworks, me fighting this person. I have two names. One of them is not in the UFC. He's in Bellator. I think me and Sergio Pettis, I think that'd be a fight. One day in the future, oh, wow. I'd really like to fight someone like a Sergio Pettis. He's someone I have a lot of respect for. And another fight that he's in the UFC, and I just think he's a fucking crazy-ass motherfucker, and I just love to fight him, is Tim Elliott. I think that's one guy that he just comes to fight every time, and he's very awkward, and he's just trying to push the issue of the fight the entire time, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. And those are two guys that, like, I have, like, dream matchups about fighting two guys like that, and I've always talked about, like, fighting guys like that. Tim Elliott's someone that I followed. I know he was a Titan FC flyweight champion. I followed him there. I followed him when he went to the Ultimate Fighter, and then he kind of ended up fighting Mighty Mouse at the end and his first run in the UFC, and then the second run he's had in the UFC. He's someone that I definitely love to fight too.
So my next question and my last question, so you've been through the system. You went through the grind. You know, you had to build yourself up after a loss. You had to learn new things. You had to, you know, go to a gym that was overwhelming at first, but then you made it your home. You have an impressive amateur career, and then you now have an impressive professional career. And, you know, the next logical step is obviously, you know, to the top. You know, you showed it in every single one of your fights. What advice would you give to somebody that is starting out at, you know, where you started, somebody that, you know, wants to, you know, they want to pursue this as a career. They want to pursue this passion of theirs. What advice would you give to the younger folk and, you know, the people that, you know, are going to start out their journey?
I would say the best advice that I could give someone first starting. I remember I got this advice when I first started. So I always think that this is the best advice that you can give someone that first start is that you get the results that you, by the work that you put into this sport. The best advice I could give someone is try to find the best gym around and just, like, completely obsess yourself over it. Like, if, let's say, you take a class and it's, like, an hour and a half class or an hour class and you learn a technique that you, like, stay after an extra 30 minutes and an hour and practice with a partner that same technique over and over again. I think one thing in this sport that people don't do enough is drilling, and I think that's probably one of the things that I would give to someone starting off is drill techniques that you like and do it over and over and over again, and just put as much time as you can on the mat and always try to find, whether it be some guys that are really competitive for you, guys that you're better than, and guys that are better than you, so you can kind of just get every level and, like, work on techniques, work on your defense by going with guys better than you, and just get pushed by going with guys that are at the same level as you. But yeah, in general, the best advice that I could give is just put as much time as possible as you can on the mat and just try to always drill, drill, drill. And also just try to avoid, especially in the beginning, that super hard sparring. I see a lot of guys when, like, they first start, they start, like, doing these super hard sparring, giving each other concussions, like, super early. They don't even know how to, like, properly block or slip or defend punches and things like that. And they're just in there slinging leather. So I would say train smart, train hard, and just put as much time as possible as you can on the mat.
Gabe, any last questions for Christian?
I'm just a standby right now. I'm a spectator.
Fair enough, brother. Christian,
I would like to see the lighter weights get more recognition and you know, go out there and keep fighting and stay prepared. I would recommend you're always in shape. If an opportunity comes, you're ready to go. You know, and yeah. I think they're the right set of training hard and always building skill sets. So keep at it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Yeah, I'm always trying to build the skill set. I'm always trying to get better. And the number one thing, whenever I step into that cage, I'm always trying to put on the most exciting fight possible. I'm always looking for the finish. That's one thing I pride myself on. If I'm not getting a finish, I'm pretty upset with myself. So I really think that's something that's going to help the flyweight division grow, is just whenever I step in there, I'm going to try to look for the finish. And I think there's a lot of other flyweights like myself trying to do that. And I think that's what's going to build the division. And I think build my career in general is I'm going to pride myself on always looking for finishes, whether it be on the feet or on the ground.
You're a fucking man. Any last words, anything you want to say? I leave you the floor. Any sponsors, anybody you want to call out, anyone you want to shout out? You know, I give you the floor.
I want to shout out my sponsor, Cairo Fit Pines. He's someone that's been there with me for, I think, since my second pro fight. So big shout out to him. If any of you guys are in the Pembroke Pines areas and you guys need a good chiropractor, I definitely recommend check out Cairo Fit Pines. Other than that, I want to give a big shout out to not just American Top Team, you know, for Conan Severia and all the guys over there for letting me train, but American Top Team Miramar, where some of my head coaches are, like Chris Navarro and Carl Darbouz. And also American Top Team Sunrise, where one of my head coaches, and he handles everything with all my fights, and I don't think I'd be where I'm at today without him. Sensei Roger Craw. He's one of those guys that's helped me a lot in my career. And other than that, guys, just tune in. I'm going to have some big fight announcements soon. I think this is going to be this is the biggest fight of my career coming up. It's going to be coming very soon, and I look forward to in the next coming weeks to announce that. And I'm really going to come into this fight to throw some more fireworks, and I think this is going to be the fight that puts me on the map.
You're the man, Christian. Thank you very, very much for your time. I'm going to be following your career and continuing to follow your career and heading up seat all the way to the top, brother. And congratulations on all your success, and congratulations on your last win.
Thank you, brother. I look forward to watching you guys grow as well. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
You're the man. Have a good one.
Okay, you too, brother.
Just had got done with Christian. So we found out that Kobe Covington's naturally an asshole. I didn't know that. Put a smile on Gabe's face. Gabe, you've been quiet the entire night. What's going on, man?
I'm sorry?
I said you've been quiet the entire night. Are you okay? What's on your mind, sir?
I can't interaction. Like there's been times I want to say things and it just, you take that, you're right there. And I sit back and my questions aren't nearly as entertaining. Cause I don't know enough. I was going to ask about is, you know, a couple of things that obviously didn't have relevance overall. So I'm a spectator for the most part.
Same.
Residential MMA pro, three-time WC champion, UFC veteran, the man Gabe, who's also going to be a new host, which is intimidating as shit because you know a lot more than me. So, like, that's also super scary. Just saying.
Well, I don't know what I know and don't know. I don't think I know out of how, you know, fighting on the big shows and that type of thing, but I'm not nearly as an avid fan as you are. You know, I'd be lying if I said I've never seen Titan fighting. I've never seen LFA, and that's actually one of my closest friends is the president of LFA. There are probably 300 plus fighters in the UFC. I have no idea who they are. So
yeah. Well, you fought in like a different era though. Like what were the promotions besides UFC and Pride? There was like IFL, there was King of the Cage, there was WC, there was like, now there's MMA promotions everywhere. And like, I think Titan got started in 2006 if I'm not mistaken, but is it because you fought and your journey started at like a different era and a different time where there was not as many UFC promotions, like, there was not as many MMA promotions out there as there is right now. Like, is it hard to keep up with? And like, do you feel that, you know, the fact that it's so oversaturated now, there's so many more fighters, it's kind of hard to follow. Like, what would you think?
I don't think it's just really saturated. I think it's actually a good thing. The more and more promotions you have that where people can actually fight and garner their skill set and get an opportunity to build their skill sets is a good thing. I don't think that, saturation is much of an issue. I think that we need more larger promotions because the money is scarce in comparison. I think they came out. The UFC gives 12% of the profits to the fighters. 12% that boxing gives, I think, 50. So I mean, I think that comes with anything with growth is a good thing. I think that when I started, Pride was the promotion. There was nothing. I mean, UFC wasn't. UFC didn't even, it existed, but it wasn't what it is, you know, today. And so seeing the transformation of Japanese MMA being the end all to it now not even really existing. And we have Risen and they have some other promotions and it will always still be there to an extent, but not like it was. I mean, for a while, I mean, what the UFC is today, Pride was back in the early 2000s.
And MMA didn't get much media coverage either. Like, it's so crazy. I wish I could have woken mine, like, just like for people watching right now. Like, none of the fighters, and I talked to it about him, about like marketing yourself and everything like that. Not a lot of fighters had that marketing. I mean, you had, you know, Royce Gracie, because UFC 1 was a big infomercial for Gracie Jiu Jitsu, and then it went underground. But when it was coming back up, I mean, what fighters did you see on like mainstream television? I remember a segment on Ken Shamrock. I remember Bob the Beast Sapp on the fucking Tonight Show. That's like the mainstream media. You know, that's the exposure that I saw from mainstream media, like covering fighters and everything. Like, do you feel it's like to everyone's hindrance that, like, you know, you have all these fighters now, and there's like 3 billion fighters in the UFC. So now, like, fighters are being marketed. They're all dressed the same, Reebok and everything like that. Like, do you think now it's like, from that standpoint, is it a bad thing that there's that saturated and there's so many fighters in the UFC? Because, you know, the limelight can only be shared. You know, you only have, what, 3 hours of a pay-per-view for the UFC. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe oversaturation is kind of.
Well, but I think it also, it comes down to, I mean, the promotion is going to promote who they want to promote. That's why they're the promotion, but fighters, if you go in there and you're knocking people out and submitting people left and right, and it's just a consistent, they're just, everybody that is brought in front of you is dropping, then you're essentially building yourself with that alone. You don't need to have a persona. Now, I mean, obviously, if you have a brash persona, which seems to be what sells now, that's going to be a more, you know, a healthier way of creating revenue, because you have a lot of people that hate you and a lot of people that like you, and both of them want to watch you fight. I mean, I've used it before, but Floyd Mayweather, you wanted to watch a Mayweather fight no matter who he fought, because you wanted to get him, you want to watch him get knocked out. And every fight that he didn't get knocked out, you waited again. And there was so many, even like the Pacquiao fight, when the Pacquiao fight happened, I'm like, Pacquiao's past his prime. The time when they could have fought, where he could have potentially won, is gone. But people still ate it up because they hated him. They were hoping that, you know, that he would get knocked out. So, you know, I understand the relevance of persona, but I also feel that if you're finishing people, it doesn't. I mean, whether people hate you, love you, or if you're, you know, a soft spoken guy, it's not going to really matter.
Right, like Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was killing
people. Look at Khabib.
Yeah.
Look at Khabib. Like, really, he's like, as far as persona, he's not marketable. He doesn't speak English well. You know, he's a family man. He's really based on tradition and just training hard. Now, there's something in that in itself, but I'll tell you, if he was a brash guy that was saying how he wanted to destroy every American, and, you know, basically took the like had a WWF persona, that guy would be making so much money.
Fucking coming out and saying, "I hate America, bless you," like Ivan Drago.
Exactly. I smashed them. Like, dude, people would watch him. They wanted him to lose, and they. Look at how many fights he had to win before he was looked in title contention.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Seriously, lightweight's concerned. I mean, he had, what, 9 fights before he was recognized for a title? He's undefeated.
I mean, Chuck Liddell went through the same shit when Tito Ortiz was on top. I mean, that was their cash cow, and they thought, okay, this is how we're going to make money. It's put Tito Ortiz on top. Chuck Liddell would play bodyguard, let him run through the Kevin Randlemans and all the fucking monsters of the world while Tito Ortiz sits pretty and fights the janitor and fights – wait, who else did Tito Ortiz defend the title against? Evan Tanner, who's a lot lighter than him.
Yeah. Yeah, they fed him enough to ensure that he's state champion. Who's, you know,
I'm sorry.
No, I listen, for better or worse, I don't think, well, like, there's some massive issues with having Tito as a poster boy. One, he can't speak well at all. Like, he's garbage, unbelievable garbage. And then if you're trying to build a Latin market, he can't speak Spanish. Like, dude, the guy, he used to have the American and the Mexican flag. He doesn't speak any Spanish. I should speak more Spanish than he does. I'm sorry. Like,
Gabe, have you ever met Tito? Like, tell us how you really feel. Like, you met Tito, haven't you? You met him. And this is the reason why you're
a number of times. We're both in California, yes.
I knew it. I knew there was some grudge. All right, what was your experience? I have
no. It's not even a grudge. Just he's a very unlikable person. He is a pure and unadulterated. You know, the very first time I ever met Tito, he goes, "Hi, I'm Tito Ortiz." Nobody introduces themselves with their first and last name. I don't know anybody that does that. Nobody. And I looked at him, I'm like, "Well, oh, nice to meet you, Tito Ortiz. I'm Kid Rudiger. Nice to meet you." Like, the only reason why you would do that is because you want me to recognize you as something that you're not. You're garbage, son. It's not like he didn't bang my girlfriend or anything like that. He's just a very unlikable, uncharismatic individual.
I remember the when Tito Ortiz was like, "Okay, I'm not going to fight Chuck Liddell because I want to start my movie career." I'm like, "Oh, Tito Ortiz is going to be an actor? That's great." He had like one cameo in one movie. It was like Cradle to the Grave, and then I go into a movie store down the shore, and there's The Crow 3. I'm like, that was Tito Ortiz's movie career? Like he put the biggest payday on hold with Chuck Liddell to star in the fucking Crow 3? Like, you crazy, Tito? Like, step over like that big chunk of money. That big chunk of money. You could fight Chuck Liddell, defend the title against Chuck Liddell. Even if he lost, he wouldn't have been a coward. But like, he literally delayed the inevitable for months and months and months, and just, oh my God, like, and that tortured me. When I saw The Crow 3 on the movie shelf, that's when I lost respect for Tito. Like, paydays in MMA were fucking
few and far between.
What the fuck?
I remember when Tito Ortiz beat up Guy Metzger and then, you know, did the whole flip-off thing to the Lions Den. And then when Frank Shamrock beat him, I actually was like, oh, and then Tito was like, oh, I'm going to train with Frank. He garnered a little more respect for me. And then he just dumped it all. He's brash and arrogant. And like, he truly believes that he is this amazing fighter. And he's just not. He's not.
He still does.
And there's nothing worse than true arrogance without any capacity to actually back it up. Beating Ken Shamrock 12 times or however many times he beat him doesn't impress me.
Three.
The only fight that Tito ever had, I was just like, what, was when he beat Ryan Bader. And if they fought 10 more times, Ryan Bader would take him to recess every time.
I saw that fight. And then, like, winning that fight, Dana White's like, good job, Tito. Now you're going to fight fucking Nogueira. You're going to fight Little Nog. Lil Nog is a fucking animal. I can't wait till he fights Shogun. I can't fucking wait for the second time. I am so excited for that fucking fight. All right, so all you losers, I mean, not losers, I'm just joking with you, but all you guys that haven't been up on your pride, there was one fight, one of the best pride fights ever, that you guys have to watch. Shogun, Lil Nog, Total Elimination 2004 or 2005. It was the same tournament where he beat Ricardo Arona in the same tournament. But his fight with
tournaments are gangster shit. Like, yeah. Dude, like when Sakuraba fought Hoist for what, an hour? Like, dude, and then he fights Bochechian in the next round. Like, gangster.
Crazy, man.
Oh, like you need to, like, yeah, I feel like that old man who's like, oh, you don't know how it was. But like, oh, look, like you look at old Valley Tudo tapes, like 30-minute, you know, no glove matches. Like, even like old Vanderlei, like with headbutts. Yeah, oh, baby.
Dude, and also you guys, and I don't mean to call you guys losers, like, you know, you guys who don't, you never watched the UFC back in the day. I was just joking with you, like, but you guys haven't experienced, like, the journey that Gabe has went through. And what I was watching while Gabe was doing his thing, like, but like Valley Tudo in Brazil, Jose Pele fighting Chuck Liddell, no gloves whatsoever, a fucking back and forth war between Chuck Liddell, who ended up becoming one of the biggest names of all time, and Jose Pele, who became a trainer, Vanderlei Silva, Anderson Silva, Shogun Rua, his brother Marilla Rua, all the big names, Pele, Chuck Liddell. Please go on YouTube. Search Vale Tudo Brazil. Trust me on this one. Swear to God, it's going to blow your mind. Right, Gabe?
Oh, yeah. I 100% agreement. Or Pele versus George Makako, 1 and 2.
Oh, my God. Wait, remember when
I think Pele's wearing an earring. He's wearing an earring in the ring. And Makako beats him up and then grabs his earring, rips it out of his ear. Like, oh, it's so, like, just brutality in the best possible way.
Jose Pele had, like, a toothpick in his mouth. And he goes, oh, hey, Makako. And just flings it right at him. And Makako's like, really, bitch? Like, really? We're about to bare-knuckle fight.
Oh, good. I don't know. Like the purity of that, the purity of like true violence. I appreciate it very, very much. And look, if you look at that stuff, you'll understand that the need for persona, it's like look at Vanderlei. Vanderlei, that's not persona. That's who he is. Like, yeah. That guy is a straight animal. You know what I mean? Like I think he became as popular as he did because he was an animal. Like, it wasn't because he was trying to put on a show. Like, that's who he is.
So, going back on the subject, too, like, Tito Ortiz, I forgot where we're going with this, but Tito Ortiz, his reward for beating Ryan Bader, Dana White's like, oh, good job. Good job, bro. Now you're going to fight Little Nog. You're going to fight Rashad Evans, who was on a tear up until fighting John Jones. Who else did he have to fight? Forrest Griffin again? Like, they just put him up against They put him up against, like, every fucking monster of the light heavyweight division just to punish him. Tito Ortiz got his ass kicked for the remainder of his years until he went to Bellator. But, yeah, you know, like, and then Tito Ortiz fought Chuck Liddell for the third time, which shouldn't have happened. I mean, that's
quite... Oh, my God, that was... That, I don't... I feel that happened in California, and yeah. I know all the athletic commissioners here, and the fact that they allowed that to happen, it's almost criminal. Like, genuinely criminal. Like I was watching every once in a while, someone sent me a video of Chuck hitting pads, and I go, dude, they should not let this fight happen. Like, hitting pads. Like, if you seem slow and you're just not committed to hitting pads, you should not be allowed to fight. And I get it. Like, I understand a fighter's spirit, and I also understand that finances probably plays a part in it, which is unfortunate, but it does. And I also I understand, like, being a fighter, it's still always in you. But at some point, like, I think it's illegal. It should be illegal for commissions to allow things like that to happen.
So, like, as a veteran, we talked about you fighting in the good old days, as you and I had bullshit about 2 episodes, and I love every minute of it, just picking your brain. Because, you know, again, I was a fan. I was in high school watching the sport, and you were doing it as I was watching as a fan. So, obviously, overwhelming sharing the hosting floor with you, because, obviously, you know a lot more than I do. But, you know, what
– I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I trust me. To me, like, you're one of the veterans and pioneers, so you're one of the heroes. You're part of the reason, like, and you might not think it because you're humble, but, like – You know, you're part of that collect group of badasses that helped bring the sport to where it is today. Like, you guys had to go through the grind, low paychecks, fighting for pennies, like, fighting in all different places and everything like that against, you know, not on the biggest audiences, not in front of the biggest audiences, not on the biggest stages. Like, you guys, you know, you're part of the pioneers. You're part of that elite group that brought the sport to where it is. So, like, I know you disagree with me, but, like, you know, you're part of that elite group of pioneers and heroes to me. Like, and I know you're going to disagree, but with that being said, what made you come to that conclusion where, you know, I got to, you know, pick something else, or maybe I got to hang them up? As a 3-time WEC champion who fought in the UFC, fought the highest level for years and years and years, like, what made you come to that conclusion that, you know, maybe it's time I should wrap it up? Like, when did you draw that conclusion?
Well, so I was cut from the UFC, and then I had to have a back surgery. And I was so adamant to just get back to fighting. Like, oh, you know, my career, I can get back to the UFC. We had talked to Joe Silva at the time, and Joe was like, yeah, you know, we gave one or two fights. And I realistically was going to drop to 45 because I didn't realize that my body composition. I just hadn't figured it out. And then going to my last fight, I got to Vegas at, like, I think 157, 58. So I cut no weight at all. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll get back. So 6 months after back surgery, I took a fight against a journeyman guy. And first round, I was beating him. And I gassed, and he beat me in the second round. And I had to have a long talk with myself. I mean, you know, I was 34. I had a brand new baby. How many fights would have taken me to get back to the UFC? I get back to the UFC, and how much money am I going to make? You know, at that point, I think the contracts were 10 and 10. And every fight I was taking, I when I took like, the Joe Lozon fight on 2 weeks' notice, I paid, I think, $6,000 out of pocket. And, you know, I got paid, I think, $10,000 for the fight, or maybe it was $8,000, I don't remember. Now, I made a lot because it was on television, so my sponsorship money was really, really high. But the reality of, like, okay, I've got to probably – now that I've lost this fight, I probably have 4 to 5 fights to get back to the UFC. And then it'll take me about 5 fights in the UFC to make – you know, any headway to where I can make money.
Yeah.
And when you have a brand new, you know, daughter who's, who takes priority over everything else, and also my neck and back are both infused now. I've had enough punishment. I needed to for the, at that point, kind of become an adult and realize that what am I going to do when this is over?
Yeah,
so I made that decision. I don't think it was a bad decision.
Right. And, you know, it speaks volumes that, you know, you went out on your shield and you had to go through these surgeries and you had to, you know, come to that conclusion and be selfless and take care of the newborn and make sure that your family's okay and safe. And what inspired you at what point in time? Was it always the goal to open up a gym and then raise the next crop of talent? When did you come to that conclusion that you want to open up a gym and contribute more to mixed martial arts than you already have? You contributed your body. You gave everything.
I've been teaching a lot. I mean, for my whole career, I would teach privates and I would teach group classes here and there, but not really like as a career. You know what I mean? Just as, you know, you need some money to compensate your training camp. So, you know, I was teaching, but I wasn't doing it with the respect of like, this is what my next avenue is going to be. I went all into fighting, and in a lot of ways, I feel like that was a poor decision. I should have had a secondary option. I'm grateful that because of all the teaching I had done, and that I had a black belt in jiu-jitsu that I could teach. So it seemed like, when I initially retired from fighting, I was doing private lessons only, and I was making good money doing that. I had some, quote unquote, celebrity clientele, but that made me really realize, like, how long can I run this for? You know, how long can I be a coach? And then I started to think about passing on knowledge to the new generation. And then more than anything is building my community, making a strong community, like making people that are accountants and that you know, soccer moms that they don't have an interest in being pro fighters, but giving them confidence and the ability to protect themselves is necessary. I just kind of grew up, to be honest.
Do you wish in hindsight that you fought in this generation as opposed to you fought where? And again, this goes back to my original point and why I always referred you as a fucking legend and like a pioneer, like a part of that elite group. Like,
OG.
Do you wish that you fought in the new generation now where you guys, they have ESPN, they have, you know, every way to market themselves from Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, you have all these promotions you can fight in, you know, there's money to be made everywhere. And now you have television deals and you have online streaming. Would you have chosen to fight in this generation with more eyes on the sport as opposed to the generation that you fought your entire career in?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult thing to ask. That would be the reason why I fought was not for fame. It wasn't for money. It wasn't for anything else, but for my own personal journey. So yeah. I'm thankful I got to do that journey. And it, you know, the first time I fought, I only did it to see if I could do it. I made $250. It wasn't, you know, it was at an Indian reservation in a parking lot, in a tent in freezing cold. I think it was raining outside. It was freezing. I did it just to see if I could do it. It wasn't a matter of like, oh, this is going to get me notoriety. This is going to, you know, make people know who I am. And I don't think I've ever really been that concerned about that. The only time I ever like allowed that to happen was, I think, the Ultimate Fighter. Started to be like, oh, wow, you know, like I'll be on TV and like, you know, people will recognize me. And you know, we can both agree that probably wasn't the best approach in that mindset of, you know, being a character versus being a fighter, which is the reason why I did this in the first place. So yeah. I'm thankful I got to do what I did. If I could go back, I would have just started a school earlier. I built a lot of schools for a lot of people as a, you know, a guest instructor or as the grappling coach in another gym. I built a lot of programs and lost a lot of students because, you know, I went along with my journey and their journey stayed at the school. So if there's one takeaway I wish I would have done more, a little bit. There are regrets in my career overall, but I'm thankful to have done what I've done and been able to train the way I've trained and travel the way I've traveled. So, no, I mean, I think it's amazing and it's great. And I see the you know, when I see talents now, I'm always impressed when I see new things, new setups and things that the kids nowadays are doing. I did my time and I still love it. I still, a perfect example, last night on Wednesday nights at my gym, I do an MMA night and we do 3 minute rounds and I did like six 3 minute rounds. And afterwards I was in my zone. I was where I needed to be. It's like that's the place where I feel most comfortable. You know, my wife all the time is just like, yeah, you're a different person. And I am. I'm not a normal person who can go, you know, 9 to 5 and, you know, play Xbox and that's his life. That's just not who I am. I love combat. I love everything about it. I may not watch it as a fan as much as I did it, you know, when I was coming up, but I still love it. It has done more good for my life than that.
Right. And you bring up the Ultimate Fighter in a negative, but like I saw nothing negative about it. Like I wrestled since I was 7 years old, and I fought in MMA and everything. There were plenty of nights where I cried to my dad saying, "Oh, I can't cut this weight. I can't. It sucks." Like, and there's plenty of people that empathize, you know. Like, and plus too, the Ultimate Fighter was just a big infomercial, and they're like, "Oh, you reality TV is all bullshit." By the way, it's all fucking bullshit, and everybody knows that. No one's stupid, you know. Like,
yes and no. I mean. So they made it look like I was the week that I was supposed to fight that I wasn't doing anything. In reality, I had strep throat. I went to the doctor on a Monday and I was on antibiotics and my body just shut down on me. I had done that cut 4 times before, no problem. I've cut 23 pounds in a day and a half and never had a problem. As a matter of fact, I saw Joe Stevenson do it. I remember when Bobby Southworth was locked in the sauna. I saw all of that and I'm like, you know what? I've done this cut 4, 5, 6. I didn't remember how many times I've done that cut. And I was like, it always works. And I went from 177 to 160 on the first day. And my body was just done. It just nothing left. You know, even if I would have fought Corey Hill would have beat my ass because I was in no shape to fight. But, you know, I feel like the Ultimate Fighter was me trying to be – well, look, it was me in a lot of ways because I'm definitely a smartass and I have no problem if you're barking in my face, you know, that I'm going to square up with you. But I would say it was me on level 11 and trying – knowing there are cameras. Like, they're you know, we know – like I going back, and I think I've said this on multiple interviews, Corey Hill, when he, like, you know – afterwards, he came and like started barking in my face. When that was over, he goes, "Hey, dog, it was just for the cameras. Don't worry, don't trip, don't worry about it." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Well, like I was ready to scrap. Like, I thought you were gonna, if you were going to throw, I thought we were going to fight. I knew he said if we fight, we get kicked out of the house. But the way you were coming at me, like, and he's like, no, don't worry about it. Everything's good. Everything's good. I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah. And we just got word from our producer that because I can pick your brain. I'm sorry, but like it's just mind blowing talking to you and talking to one of the veterans of the game. And knowing that you're a co-host now, like even more intimidating. So like I can pick your brain all night long and talk about the sport. And well, we get the honor and pleasure of hearing you every single Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. and hear your perspective on the sport. And you talk to these younger guys and people in the UFC. And, you know, it's going to be an honor just talking to you. And I literally can talk to you about the sport all night long. And I apologize for running late to the producer. But, Gabe, any last words or anything you want to say or anything you want to shout out? I'm so sorry for taking up too much of your time.
I'm glad to be here. And I have a pretty open dialogue about anything anybody wants to talk about. I'm definitely in a different position in my life, you know, where I'm at my gym, Kaiju MMA. Prior to COVID-19, I was there 7 days a week. Now I'm there four days a week because we have a slightly different schedule until everything's back to normal. But I love MMA. I love everything about it, and I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity that I did. And I, you know, it's fun to see the new generation come up, and I have no doubts that there's going to be some kids that we talk kids. God, young man,
get off my lawn!
Get off my lawn! There's going to be like I think that there's going to be some talents that we're going to see that very possible that we're going to interview prior to them, you know, making serious steps in their careers, and that's great.
Awesome. So yep. That wraps up the show, the little podcast. We're going to be back next Thursday night. Matt, bring us home, baby. Like, who we got next Thursday for me, Gabe, and Justin to talk? And I hope Justin comes back next week because I fucking miss him.
Oh, he's coming back, I believe. But I miss you. He just hasn't been feeling
good. What do we got next week?
We got the UFC fighters, Smiling Sam Alvey, excuse me, and the MMA fighter Victor Rodriguez and Jeremiah Sierra.
Goddamn.
Nice.
It's going to be a stacked show, and I got to thank Godzilla for being our co-host now. You're the man. In my book, you're the man, and obviously you're an MMA pioneer. Yeah. So
I'm definitely glad you're here. You're going to bring a lot of experience to the table. Obviously, David's got some knowledge about the game today, but
I think
we're going to have a great show, and I'm really looking forward to having Justin back on. So,
yeah, me too. All right, gentlemen. Take care.
All right. Well,
thank you. Perfect.